Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and it is time to review the Hero World Challenge. And to do that, there's no better team than the team that we've got here assembled. So first off, welcome to the show, Kyle Porter.
How's it going, Rick?
It's going well. We are in the midst. We were just saying before we went live, we're running straight from the Bahamas to Australia. Our schedules are going to be messed up a little bit, but this is a fun time of year, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's certainly more like laid back than, you know, Masters US Open time. So it's a combination of covering stuff and but also enjoying it maybe more as a fan than you would at some of the other times of year.
For sure. And additionally on the line, Mark Immelman. I will not say good morning. I've made that mistake. Good afternoon. Almost football time on a Saturday for you.
How's it? Yes, indeed. The Dogs are about to line up against the Bayou Bengals in just a few. Yeah, but I was enjoying some golf this morning, honestly, on TV, and it was certainly good to see Tiger playing as well as what he did. I mean, the entire group. It was a birdie fest for a while, and the conditions were ideal, and I think it was pretty cool the way the golf course was set up. A lot of the elements to the design and the conditions were similar to what that team will face down in Australia in a few days' time.
Yeah. This was a really fun one because not only is it a bunch of big names, and there seemed to be, you know, at one point for a moment, I think we had like a 6-way tie up top or a 5-way tie up top. It was really heating up, and it's Henrik Stenson who comes away with it, finishes with a 6-under round. I mean, we are recording this. You know, the ink on Henrik Stenson's scorecard might not be dry yet. So, Mark, what are your initial reactions after seeing Stenson and his, you know, highly talked about new 3-wood putting this one away?
Well, one of the key shots to the tournament was with a 5-wood in the bag, and typically Henrik doesn't carry one of those on the par 5 late in the back 9. But for me, you know, Stenson's that kind of guy. He's got the reliable golf swing. He's got that unflappable sort of demeanor, the major championship sort of way about him. And just testament to who he is how many times he's beaten the swing yips and come back from, you know, periods of times in the golfing doldrums. And once again, this last season, he didn't have his very best stuff, Henrik Stenson, but, you know, been working hard on the physical fitness, has been back home in Orlando working on the game some, and to basically play in the final twosome and put the thing away when he needed to. I mean, that putter of his was on fire on the back 9. So all systems working well for Henrik. And for my opinion, I think just a great way to go into the off season, because that's got to be a massive boost for the Stenson morale and confidence.
Yeah, that shot that you're referencing, Mark, came on 15, where he hits that huge, massive 5-wood to tap in eagle range, which, Kyle, I've already seen that highlight on Twitter. How many times have you watched that clip so far?
Yeah, it was incredible. And I was kind of bouncing back and forth. I didn't realize what hole he was on. So I didn't know that was his second on a par 5. And it was like, I mean, it was unreal. Like it almost went in. And to hit that shot at any time, much less in the final round when, you know, Rahm is kind of running out in front. I thought it was sort of a 3-horse race after about the 12th or 13th. I thought it was going to be Stenson, JT, and Tiger. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Rahm goes 3-3-3 on 14, 15, 16. You're like, wait a second. Like, this guy's the defending champ. He's been the best player in the world probably for the second half of the year. Is he just going to, like, birdie in and win this? And then Stenson ended things very quickly on 15, and then you know, parred in for the win. I thought the pars on the last three holes. Look, Albany's not a hard course. I don't think anybody thinks that it is. But the closing stretch, depending on the pin positions, and especially 18, that can be a little tricky. That can be a little tough. So I thought it was an impressive way to close it out after basically winning it with that 5-wood on 15.
Yeah, I thought John Rahm, when he also eagled 15, but he poured in a putt from, I think it was just off the fringe, and he had that look in his eye, Mark, which is the look of a guy who is now going for his third straight win and is, you know, he might be at the point, of course he's getting married and he's looking forward to that, but he might be thinking, hey, I wish there were some more big money prizes I could play for, because I'm playing really, really well right now.
Yeah, no doubt. And the thing about it, too, is there are world ranking points on offer in this event. And you know, Rahm's got his sights set in that world number one thing. And honestly, Rick, when I watch this guy play, we've talked about him before. He is almost machine-like off the tee. And Kyle makes a really good point with the final few holes there. 18, you typically play in off the left. There's water hazard down the left. There's sand dunes and stuff on the right. He's in contention, looking to post. Absolutely bludgeons the driver down the left-hand side of the fairway, takes on the Tiger sort of line, to use a Tiger pun, pardon me, and just hits an absolute gem, sets himself up with a scoring club in hand. And it's like the guy's confidence is just sky high right now, and it doesn't look like there's any tournament that he can't win. And it was curious for me, too, because I was keen to see how he was going to go. And early in the round was just hitting the ball beautifully but not making anything. And you could sort of, I was wondering if he had run out of gas, basically. Then all of a sudden, he's so mercurial and he's got so many weapons. One rumbles in, then two, then three, and all of a sudden, he's leading the event. And that's who he is. And this is why he must be a daunting prospect for all of the competition for 2020.
Yeah, if you walked the dog for 15 minutes, you came back and John Rahm would have been like five under on like some ridiculous four under on a three-hole stretch, and I was like, oh my god, this guy's flying up. But to put a bow on Stenson, Kyle, you know, because this is something that we had talked about just a few days ago. Yeah. Stenson was one of those guys in the official world golf rankings who had slipped into the 40s, and it was an interesting place because we saw you know, Stenson was in the 40s, Bubba was in the 40s, and Jordan Spieth was in the 40s, and we kind of alluded to, you know, it's either going to drop like a rock from here for these guys, or they're going to maybe get back into shape and figure something out. This has got to be pretty good for Stenson's prospects moving forward.
Yeah, I think so. And I think what you see when you look at Stenson is a good trajectory, right? So he starts the year three straight missed cuts worldwide to open 2019. You're like, wow, what's going on with this guy? But then in the summer, it got a lot better. You know, he plays well at the US Open. He plays well at the Open Championship. He plays well at the Scottish Open. And so his trajectory over the second half has been actually pretty good. Unlike, say, I don't know, like a Spieth who kind of just, he's kind of all over the place. He'll have a third place, then he'll miss a couple cuts, then he'll have a seventh and miss a couple cuts. There's no real trajectory there for somebody like Spieth. It seems to be more of a, oh, his putter was hot and he finished in the top 10. With Stenson, there was a real, like, I'm playing a lot better type trajectory. And so I think, not that you could see this win coming, but he was certainly, I think, like on an upward swing in terms of the way he was playing over the last couple of years.
I do love that point about trajectory. It's not the Michael Kim trajectory either, right? Where you miss like 18 cuts coming in, you win, and then you miss like 20 more. But it is interesting to see how guys build and what they take out of each tournament. And Mark, you know, we're now contractually obligated to talk about Tiger Woods as we always do. But I think there's a lot of layers on Tiger. You know, I think stepping to the tee on 14. I certainly thought he was going to win this thing. And then he kind of makes a bogey on a birdie hole and just kind of stalled out after that. And I don't know, you know, my expectations were not very high for Tiger this week, just because I thought there was a lot of noise around him. And I thought that they could have easily just been looking forward to the President's Cup. But, you know, if you're Tiger and you're standing on 14T thinking you have a really good chance of winning this, what's the takeaway for him moving forward?
Well, I think the takeaway is bright. I mean, the way he drove the golf ball, I think I saw some statistic that he's led the field in driving accuracy four times in his career, and one of that was this week. Now, yes, the fairways there at Albany are a little wider because the golf course is designed around the cross breezes and stuff, so you don't have to be Fred Funk to hit in the fairway. But when he's driving the thing with some pop that he is, he's driving it nearly 70% of the fairways he plays with the iron game as he has it. The ability to control distance. I mean, there was a 5-iron, I think it was, early in the round on a par 3, dangerous right hole location. He just hit this beautiful, beautiful peeling left to right cut right at the heart of the green, perfectly pin high. And when Tiger's hitting the ball to hole high, you know his swing is on point. So with the driving accuracy, with the iron game there, the green surfaces were ideal, and he looked to me like he misread a few putts, because all the putts that he missed, they had his attention for a long, long time. It's not like he gave there was only one memory serves that he gave up on. So everything was there. So I think the takeaway for Tiger is, dang, I've played two events, 60s, seven of eight times. I mean, I'm flushing my irons. I'm putting the ball in play. Look out, world. We're roll on 2020 and obviously the President's Cup next week.
Yeah, this is kind of crazy because to that exact point, two starts, the win at the Zozo, then he's, you know, just a few holes away from raising his own trophy, you know, with a Tiger on it, one of the better trophies in golf, Kyle. And yeah, I mean, this guy, we can pile on so many superlatives, but this, it really feels like he's turned back the clock. And if he's going to be hitting fairways like this, it was a great stat, Mark. I saw it. It was, yeah, like 380 starts. He's only led the field, in driving accuracy four times. Like, this is an unbelievable version of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that stat because it normalizes, it doesn't take into account fairway width. So, I mean, like Mark was talking about, it's not, I mean, it's resort course fairways. It's fairways for me and you, not for professional golfers. And it sort of normalizes it because it's not saying, well, he hit 85%. You're like, well, what does that mean? They're 90 yards wide, but it's saying, hey,
but everybody's playing those.
Yeah.
Everybody's
like, he was better than everybody else in the field in terms of driving accuracy this week. And you saw it. I mean, it was like every time I looked up, he's middle of the fairway. And it was really impressive. I did not envision him coming into the fall and getting beat by only three guys in two events. I did not. If you would have told me that would happen at the beginning of the FedEx Cup playoffs, I would have laughed at you. He looks really good. His swing continues to look really fluid. And maybe we sort of underrated how much his kind of end of season injuries affected him. And you know, that'll be a thing going forward. He'll always have, you know, nagging injuries here and there. But there's certainly a lot more excitement about him going into 2020 than there was, say, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it in a few. But I'm very interested to see how he treats himself at the President's Cup. You know, he gets to choose when he plays and how much he plays. So we'll save that for a little bit later, because there's another President's Cup team member here who had a lot of controversy around him. Patrick Reed assessed a two-shot penalty during Friday's round, the third round, for improving his lie in a waste bunker. And Kyle, of course, how many shots behind do you think he finished off of first place? could have used those two.
Yeah, he finishes two back of Stenson, one back of Rahm. Not a great look.
No.
But the worst look is afterwards blaming it on the camera angle. And it's like, yeah. I don't know, man. Like, it is what it is, you know? And it's just, I don't know. We could go for hours on the implications and what it means. His reputation, I don't know. You talk to people, it's not the greatest reputation in the world, obviously. So I just think to do that and then to kind of try to pin the blame elsewhere is, I don't know. It's not a good look.
Yeah, I also didn't think it helped that there was a video that emerged from 2015 at the same course where he basically did the same thing. And it's like, maybe he's got a habit of doing this stuff. And Mark, you're out there with the guys and you're hearing what they're saying. And there's such a big mentality in golf around, you know, protecting the field. And I'm really interested to hear how you felt about this whole Patrick Reed situation. One, you know, the penalty in itself, which was pretty egregious, but kind of how he might have reacted to it afterwards.
Well, let me preface this with the fact that I've called a few of his victories, and he's a really good guy. He's been nothing but charming to me. I know the public persona sometimes is a little more caustic. But look, as a golfer and as a competitor, I don't care if it's a waste bunker or not, you do not get your golf club close to your golf ball when you're making practice swings and rehearsals and such, especially when you sort of set the blade behind the golf ball, then make your practice swing and step out of one and sort of strike the ground in a different place. Look, he does that when he hits wedge shots. If you watch him from the fairway, he'll get the blade sort of behind the ball, make a backswing, and then swing away from the thing. It's kind of his, one of his deals on odd occasions when it's a certain situation. But when you're in a situation like that, things can only go wrong. You know, you just happen to graze some sand and then you're improving your line. It's dangerous. And especially that lie he drew, because I looked at this a long time and that ball was well down into the shale. Yeah. sand and whatever it was. And so, yeah, he tells says it was camera angle. I found it curious because, you know, the camera guys, especially if you went up once or twice, they're going to come and try and catch you too, you know, and knowing them as I've worked with the guys. And so that camera was trained on him, and I was shocked that he'd actually go and try and do something like that, for one. And then afterwards, the response was kind of pleading a bit of ignorance. So I don't know. I just know personally, you don't make practice swings close to your golf ball in any place.
Yeah.
If woods, if you're in the waste bunker, you just don't do it.
Yeah. And Kyle kind of alluded this, but Mark, I don't want to ask you to speak for anybody, but, you know, for a guy who has this reputation of not being great, you know, if you're paired with him, are you like, hey, I've got to keep an extra eye on this guy? Like, do you think that other players are kind of getting sick of this, or do they think, okay, he got the penalty he deserved, we can move on? I know you can't speak for them, but just from, you know, from your personal standpoint, how do you think it's going out there on tour with the rest of the guys?
Well, from my perspective, you know, if I was in that situation, it's your job as the marker. You've got the guy's scorecard. It's your job to keep tabs on your competitor, and you keep his score, and you make sure when a drop is required that you don't just give the guy the thumbs up from the other side of the fairway. It is incumbent on you to go and make sure that the rules are being abided by, even though we play this gentleman's game. So if it was me, I would be keeping an eye on him, but I would do that on every competitor I play alongside. And then as far as the players go, that, you know, there'll be guys talking, it'll be some locker room speak, but everyone's into themselves, really. You know, they want to make the most of their season and their endorsements and their whatever it is. So folks kind of keep to themselves, and this thing, just like everything else, will sort of blow over, I'm sure, you're pretty shortly.
But
I will say
ahead,
this,
Mark.
And, you know, there's been a few players that have been sort of tarnished a little bit by cheating accusations, and those things don't go away. They just don't.
Yeah, Kyle, I do wonder if this is a bigger deal on golf Twitter than it is kind of like on the tour. Pretty egregious, and, you know, if it was anybody else, I think you might give him a pass, but Patrick Reed's kind of had this history. But yeah, is this something that just blows over in a couple of weeks? You know, if Patrick Reed goes 5-0 next week at the President's Cup, he's back to being Captain America?
Yeah, I think there's the potential there for it to blow over. But I think what happens when you have somebody who doesn't have the greatest reputation coming in, you lose some of the benefit of the doubt in the future, right? So guys who have these like just premium reputations and are known as trustworthy and whatever, like, they get benefit of the doubt in some of these situations. And guys like him, like, you have to, and whether this is his fault or not doesn't really matter, but you have to overcome some of the, I think, stereotype or whatever it is by not doing stuff like this, you know?
Right.
And so I just think some of the benefit of the doubt there is eroding, not to make a joke about his ball in the sand, but is
nice.
is eroding a little bit as you move into the future. So I think, yeah, are people going to be talking about it come the Masters? Probably not, but it's another mark in terms of like what the benefit of the doubt is for these guys going forward.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to look ahead to the President's Cup, but first let's take a quick break for a word from our partners.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out, Vuori.com/first, and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt, and I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to, and Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th.
And welcome back. So this tournament, gentlemen, the Hero World Challenge, you know, we heard a lot of conversation about this kind of being a tune-up match, tune-up tournament for next week at the President's Cup. We had 11 of the 12 U.S. members here. The only guy who needed the week off, a little extra rehab on the knee, is Dustin Johnson. And looking at the leaderboards, you know, Henrik Stenson wins it. John Rahm comes in second. You know, they're not going to be at the President's Cup. Justin Rose had a fifth place finish. Kyle, I think there were some positive things. Ricky Fowler played much better than I expected after a long break. But to see Patrick Cantlay struggle, to see Bryson struggle, even Matt Kuchar didn't play all that well. I'm starting to think this is a little bit more of a negative than a positive for this tune-up. But can we just write it off and say, hey, you know, it is what it is. Let's see these guys in Australia.
I think you can mostly write it off, but I do think when you combine, you know, Cantlay finishes 17, Bryson finishes 15 with a 76. Yeah. Kuchar was way down there. Webb didn't play. You know, I don't know. You start to get up there. Webb and Xander played all right. But I think when you combine some of the poor play with just all the travel they're going to have. I mean, Tiger said it after the round. He's like, we got 20 hours in a tin box or whatever he said. And it's just, I don't know. The formula is certainly there for them to not start off that great during the week. I think once you get to singles, it might be a different story, but I'm super interested in that first day. How does it go? You know, what does it look like? And, you know, does any of this affect the way they play in Australia? I think it could, but, you know, who knows? They might go out and win like they did last year or 2 years ago by a touchdown or more.
Yeah, and that's true. And there might just be a situation where it's a pretty good field. Like, you know, if you threw CT Pan in this field, or you threw Adam Hadwin in this field, hey, they might have finished, you know, 19th and 20th. Who knows? But we have the field that we're looking at here. I do think some of the positives, Mark. Nice to see Ricky Fowler come out and play very well. He goes 10 under, finishes in ninth place after, you know, a long extended break for him. Tony Finau, who opened with a 79, went 68, 69, 65. And if this was a three-round tournament, would have finished one shot behind Stenson and Rahm. So there are certainly some positive takeaways from this for the U.S. team, wouldn't you say, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I was listening to Kyle's take there, and he's very much on point with his observations. My observation would be, you know, you're playing in breezy conditions. You're sort of getting the feel for your game, really. That's what they were using as a bit of a tune-up. But all of that sort of stuff, you know, 20 hours in a plane, and you're traveling how many time zones ahead of you, and you're basically losing a day thanks to travel, you're a different individual when you get there on Monday morning or whenever it is that they arrive. And then you've got all of the galas and things they got to attend. And so that's the balancing act for individuals. But the one thing when you're representing your country and when you're playing in teams, I don't care what sort of team it is, there is emotion that is brought to bear. And these guys are going to be gassed up and adrenalized, and I'm certain – yes, you want guys that are coming in and playing well, but on the first day is four ball. And so you're playing best balls and you get a buddy on your side and he starts playing well and he drags you along. You can sort of throw the form book out of the window a little bit, if you know what I'm saying. So did they do very well as well as they should have? Not perhaps, but there were some bright spots. I think Ricky was, as you point out, and Finau turned it around. Tiger's are bright spots. So I just know that roll around round one, four balls, you're playing best ball with a guy that you've been practicing alongside. I think they'll be just fine. I was looking through their world rankings. I mean, this sans Brooks Koepka, this is still murderer's row, and these guys are going to be fine.
Yeah, I'm very interested. I think one of the biggest storylines for me is what Tiger does, just because he's got all the power here, right? In previous President's Cups, we've seen him rolled out there, you know, five sessions because he's the greatest player ever. He's the best player in the world at the time. Now with this murderer's row, as you alluded to, Mark, he has a lot of flexibility. They might not need him as much, and 20 something hours in a tin box might not be great for the body. You tell me, Mark. Like I don't think he's going to play as much as everyone thinks he is. I think he's going to play like three sessions.
I think you're on point there. I think he goes three of the five. I'd be surprised if he didn't play on day one when you're playing best ball, the four ball matches. Because if he doesn't, let's say one of those that he sits, when you play alternate shot on day two, you're hitting half of the shots. So if he's looking to really rest himself and make sure that he's ready for a big day on day three and obviously the singles matches, you know, he may take round one off. But I'm with you, Rick. I don't think he plays all five sessions. I think you'll see him at least three, and you definitely won't see him twice on the third day when there's 36 holes.
Yeah, that's for the younger guys. So, Kyle, we've talked quite a bit about the President's Cup. I still am a big believer that the U.S. team is going to kind of lay the smack down. But there's some things that I'm just a pessimist in general, where I see Finau shoot 79 in the first round. I see a couple of Americans towards the bottom of the leaderboard here, and I get a little nervous, but I still think this is the U.S. in a blowout, huh?
Yeah, I think so too. One note on the Tiger thing. I was hollering about this last year during the Ryder Cup. I just think he had so much, and I've probably said this to you before, I think he had so much value as a captain or vice captain or whatever it is, that maybe like I think he adds more value there than he does on the course. That's not to take away from what he does on the course. Obviously he's playing great golf, but I'm with you. I hope he doesn't play himself too much. I don't think he will. I think he really relishes that kind of captain role and wants to do a really good job at it. And I think he knows that means not playing himself maybe as much as he otherwise would.
Yeah, I think this actually goes back to before the Zozo. If he did not win the Zozo, I think it would have been closer to a toss-up if he actually picked himself. I think he still should have. But when he goes out and wins the Zozo, he has to pick himself. But there was that, I think it was at the selection when they did it live and he was there down at, you know, his restaurant, where he was basically like, you know, the vice captains and everyone was said, I'd be crazy if I didn't pick myself, or I'd be, you know, Gary Woodland had that comment where he'd be stupid not to pick himself. And I just feel like Tiger is taking the role of captain very, very seriously, to like, hey, I'm going to do my captain's roles. And like, it's okay if I step back a little bit and, sit out some of these sessions, because I'm the captain here. And I do agree with you, Kyle, there is a lot that he can bring to this team if it's not hitting shots. Hitting shots would be great too, but there's so much more than that.
Yeah, I'm the captain now. Just use that GIF all week. But to your actual question from earlier, it's tough to look at it and think anything other than a U.S. route. But here's my deal. I think it'd be a ton of fun if the international team was like super competitive early. And Ben on and Joaquin Neiman are just pounding DJ and Webb Simpson or something like that. And you're like, wait a second. Yeah. I hope we get some of that and not another whatever 18-12 blowout come Sunday.
Well, go ahead, Mark.
No, I was gonna add to that. And I'm you know, my wife asked me the other day, she goes, who are you actually pulling for in this thing? Because, you know,
Georgia,
I'm an American citizen, you know, and obviously I'd like to see the internationals do well. And so I thought about this a lot, and I've spent a lot of time sort of ruminating players and pairings and such. And I spoke briefly with my brother, who's an assistant captain, and the way Royal Melbourne sets up, you know, it's not the longest golf course in the world. There's a real premium placed on the wide fairways, but you've got to hit the ball to an area to set up an angle, because the farther back you are, the more you stray offline, the harder it is to access some of the hole locations on these devilish and well-bunkered greens. And a lot of the internationals, I'll tell you straight off the bat, Anser, CT Pan, Cameron Smith, you know, these are guys that might not blow you away with razzle dazzle. Neiman's another one. Sung Jae Im is another, as we all know. Ben Ahn, we all irate. These are guys that could be really dangerous around there. Anser has had success down in Australia. Cam Smith, the Mark Leishman, grew up just down the road. So I'm with Kyle. If it's competitive early, if the internationals hang in and they get some emotion about them, I think they can make this a deal. I really, really do. And I feel like in my heart of hearts, and I'm not just saying this because I'm the resident international rep on this podcast.
Well, I want to expand a little bit on that danger aspect of it. But before I do that, we did have a few of the international team members already in Australia playing over there this week. Adam Scott missed the cut, but Louis and Mark Leishman were in the top 10 through three rounds. Anser's playing, Cam Smith's playing, CT Pan is playing. But to kind of go a little bit deeper on that, Mark, because one of the things that I think in sports, you know, a dangerous team in a lot of sports or someone dangerous is like someone who has nothing to lose. And we've kind of been sitting here over the last, I don't know how many weeks, telling everyone that this is going to be a U.S. route. And we've been reading off the stats and the numbers that it's been like 9 straight President's Cups that, you know, the U.S. has won and all this stuff. And I just have this little thing inside of me thinking, you know, somebody with nothing to lose, a team that's expected to kind of lose on home turf, just go out there, play free and easy, and sometimes crazy things happen. So I think there is even more danger to it from that aspect, Mark.
Yeah, there is. And a personal anecdote, earlier this year, I was the captain of the International Palmer Cup team, and we were wildly outranked by the American side. I mean, it was ridiculous. They were supposed to spank us playing here in the United States, and we were down 8-4 after the first session. And I said to the kids, I was like, look, here's what I see. I just see a scoreboard that says down 8-4, but I see another 4 sessions ahead of us, and there's so many points available. And if we just keep doing the right thing and we play golf and we don't get ourselves wrapped up in who we're playing against, you just hit the right shots, you're going to be fine. Turns out that the internationals had a big victory. And Captain Ernie has been preaching this to the internationals the entire time. Start with the team logo, which is a unification sort of a thing that he brought in there, because now you all different countries unified under this logo, but with your country's flag right in the middle of it. So he's getting guys together, and he's been talking about, hey, man, they're playing basically in our backyard. A lot of the Aussies are going to be cheering for Tiger, but this sort of golf suits us. And if we just do our thing, there's no reason why a CT Pan and a Sung Jae Im can't knock off, you know, Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson. No reason whatsoever. 18 holes match play, anything can happen.
Yeah, it's really something. And Kyle, I'm a little worried. I'm not very worried, but I am slightly worried that we look like fools in like 7 days on this, because this a little scrappy team like the internationals who have all of these rookies, but then the guys that have been around are kind of super vets. I mean, Adam Scott, Louis, Hideki's on this team, Leishman. Like it's almost just like you have both ends of the spectrum. You have really seasoned professionals, and then you've got like these rookies that are playing kind of this type of format for the first time. So that might be the formula to win something like this.
Yeah, I think you're right. I like that point about it being the formula. I mean, that's a formula we always see from the Europeans in the Ryder Cup, right? You get a rookie, you get Thomas Peters out there, and you're like, who the hell is this? Like, why is he 3-1 right now? You know, and you know, again, I think it's a different caliber probably for the most part, but I don't know. Is Ben on like worse than Thomas Peters was a couple years ago? Not really. He's probably better. So I do think there's a world, and we've talked a ton about this, but like in which it's better to be a rookie, inexperienced. Ernie Els said this, you don't have the scars that some of the other guys had, and yet Adam Scott, Hideki, they can at least show you the ropes a little bit in terms of like, hey, this is sort of our rhythm, this is our routine, and just set those guys up to hit golf shots and to, you know, maybe take down a few guys in match play.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it. But we're going to have a lot of President's Cup coverage for next week. So we're going to put a bow on this. But before we do so, I want to have a little fun with you guys because Puma, who is awesome with the gear, awesome with the apparel. I love it. They've unveiled the Slow Play Turtle as a design on one of their shirts. And spoiler alert, Bryson DeChambeau did not want to wear that. Might be a little sensitive subject for him. So what I want to ask you guys, and we'll start with you, Mark, what animal shirt would you like to rock on the golf course?
well, the South African in me is coming out now, obviously, and you know, the lion is the king of the jungle, he's the king of the beasts, so I'd like to have a lion on there, you know, in the interests of Simba and those great felines of the past. I'll go with a lion.
Yeah, and you look down at the lion on your shirt, gives you a little extra confidence, lets you know, hey, knock this putt in. You got this.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Kyle, what animal would you have on your shirt?
Well, I want the one that Bryson won't wear, and then I'm going to take a Sharpie to it and put Bryson is a at the top. And then it says Slow Play Turtle, because come on, dude. Oh, like,
a custom shirt.
have some fun with it. Like, I don't know, man. Like, everybody just takes themselves so seriously, and it's like, the whole thing is like just it's a spectacle, and I feel like I think some guys get that. They understand that they're entertainers, it's a performance, this whole deal. And sometimes I just feel like people just take themselves too seriously in this industry.
I don't think we would have even known this existed if Bryson just wore the shirt, because it's all have you seen? It's literally just a turtle design. Like, no, like no one would have known about this if he just went out there and wore it, but he refuses and it becomes a story. So for me, I'm with Cam Smith, where we are dachshund owners. So I'll have that little wiener dog logo on my shirt, and we'll be wagging our tail all the way to the finish line.
Nobody shows tiger. Nobody shows a tiger shirt.
Because that's tough to follow.
That's where if I was playing along, if ands and buts were candy and nuts, you know, the thing. But if I was playing alongside Tiger Woods, the last thing I'd wear is black slacks and a red shirt. Patrick Reed does that, speaks to the moxie of the guy. So no, you can't do Tiger. That one's taken.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, if I'm wearing red and black in a tournament, it's going to be in a tournament that Tiger is not playing in, not affiliated with, and probably not in the same country as while I'm participating.
Yeah, and if you do it, you better win, because you look like you have to. All right, boys. Well, listen, we've got a lot on the schedule for next week with the President's Cup. I'm looking very much forward to that. So for this show, I want to thank Mark Immelman. Follow him on Twitter. It's @Mark_Immelman, and Kyle Porter @KylePorterCBS. I'm Rick Gaiman. We'll talk to you soon.
Go Dogs.
Appreciate you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.